If Merrick versus Wyszynski were another hockey radio show.
Hey, everybody, coming up on the Merrick versus Wyszynski podcast, a favorite segment of ours, pluses and minuses of the week. And I got to tell you, Jeff, I'm going to give a big fat minus to that Nail Yakupov. Oh, my God, that brash Russian rookie of the Edmonton Oilers. Enough with the hot dogging, buddy. You're new to this game. Act like you've been there.
Oh, let the kid have some fun, Greg Wyszynski. My big plus, a big two thumbs up, is going to the Minnesota Wild. Only one team could shut down those Chicago Blackhawks, streaking through six games. Corey Crawford, holy smokes, he's the second star. Big thumbs up to the Minnesota Wild.
I'm going to give a big thumbs up to Craig Anderson, goaltender for the Ottawa Senators. Man, there was a time I thought all he could do was ogle the ice girls. Turns out he's a heck of a netminder as well. Big time backstop, and they're going to need him if Jason Spezza is going to be out for 2 months, I'll tell you though, Jeff.
Time for a double time check. 12:45, 15 before the hour. What's going on in the nation's capital in Canada? Jason Spezza hit the brakes. He's having surgery on Friday. He could be gone for as much as 2 months. Looks like the good ship Paul McLean just hit a speed wobble.
Coming up, traffic and weather together on the 8th. Also, later in the show, producer Josh is going to eat a really hot chicken wing. I'm in an atomic chicken wing, a really, really hot chicken wing. And we're going to watch him as he sweats.
Honka.
Oh, man.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Sometimes I really hate sports talk radio.
I know. It's the worst. And that's why we're happy. You know, we don't talk enough about how we love doing the podcast. People are always – I don't know about you. I've had people say, hey – like, it'd be cool to have you on XM. It'd be cool to have you on Sports
That 5. Don't want it.
We wouldn't be able to do the same show. We'd have to have ad breaks and do
traffic.
Well, okay, granted, if we had ad breaks, we'd probably make money that we're not making now off the show. But you know what I'm talking about. Like, the structure of the show is a very free-form, organic, wonderful thing. We do the intro we want to. You can tell your dopey stories whenever you want to and not have to worry about... What? You know what I'm saying? Hey, enough with that malarkey over there, you. Give me the business about my stories. You know, I like doing the show that we do on the podcast. There's not a whole hell of a lot of structure on it. Although now there's two things of structure now. Game Show Friday and Going Postal Wednesday. And that's it.
I think we have too many features. I think it's getting too featurey. I think the podcast already wish is getting too gimmicky, to be honest with you. I really, really do. I think it's too much. You see, I kind of see this. You know, there is that great moment in the movie Spinal Tap, which we all love, where Nigel Tufnel leaves the band and they go on a new direction and they go to that, they go to the, what is it? They go to like the amusement park to play a gig and they realize that the puppet show has top billing over them and they decide to go freeform jazz because, you know, Nigel's not there. So all the solos are gone and they play a song called Jazz Odyssey. This is Derek Smalls on the bass. He wrote this. See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
That's
kind of always framed it in my own mind. And Merrick versus Wyszynski, Jazz Odyssey.
Well, you bring up Spinal Tap, and it's a great transition because just like every drummer that ever worked for Spinal Tap died in a spectacular fashion, every prospective owner for the Phoenix Coyotes seems to explode or implode or simply just plode in a spectacular fashion. The news of the day, courtesy of Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail, and kind of bubbling under the surface of other media outlets as we do the show today on a Thursday. January 31st, last day of Janeiro, heading into Febrero.
Hey, and we can see the weekend on the horizon. Tomorrow's Friday. We're working for the weekend. Chugga chugga 501. Yabba dabba doo. Fred Flintstone's going home.
The news is that Greg Jameson's, well, not his bid overall, I guess, but his bid for this team under this lease agreement, probably done, unable to raise the proper funding to buy the Phoenix Coyotes by the deadline for this lease. The mayor says no extension on the lease. And this is a real shock because, you know, they've been so forthright with the funding for this team for so long. I mean, I am shocked that at the end of the day, there isn't anybody with any money willing to put up dough to help him buy this team.
Think about this for a second. Let the gravity of this statement settle in. Glendale City Council, under this lease arrangement, handed over $320 million, right, to run the affairs. Now, mind you, it is spread over 20 years, but nonetheless, they were prepared to write a check for $320 million. in order to get this deal done. Even with that in Greg Jameson's hip pocket, he couldn't raise enough money to buy this team. Greg, this is not going to happen. No one is going to buy the Phoenix Coyotes. I feel bad for Coyotes fans. I feel bad for Shane Doan, who signed for less money in Phoenix because he wanted to stay with the team, was convinced by Jameson that he would own the team and it would stay in Glendale. That's not going to happen. I feel bad for him. Now he may end up, well, he probably will end up in a market that he didn't choose as an unrestricted free agent. Maybe that'll be by way of relocation. Maybe it'll be by way of dispersal. I feel bad again for Coyotes fans.
I feel terrible for Coyotes fans.
I know, I mean, it's awful. Absolutely brutal. Terrible. It's brutal, it's awful, it sucks. But the reality is, the big mistake was when they moved the rink to Glendale. And that Glendale project, we're going to build this community around sports complexes. Well, that didn't really work. No one's going to buy this turkey. And you know what has to stop? This charade. This charade of, we have someone else that's interested in buying the Phoenix Coyotes. Remember that press conference, Wish, with James? What was that? When we look back now, how many embarrassing steps have there been along the way?
You know what that was, and it's been like this since Jameson got involved. It's the NHL has been working to try to create the perception that this thing was going to happen, and if they could do that, they can convince people to buy into it. You know, it was the same thing as having these press conferences without anybody with any money stepping up and saying, hey, I'm going to help buy the team. It's doing all of this, laying the groundwork with Glendale, trying to attract investors because they feel like the lease thing is done. And it's just never worked. Because as you said, at the end of the day, business people like to look at books.
They do. They like numbers.
If you look inside
they don't like
books, you are scared shitless about buying into this franchise.
Banks don't want to take a nibble. Venture capitalists don't want to take a nibble. Hedge fund entrepreneurs don't want to take a nibble at this one. Nobody wants it. And why would you? Unless, I mean, the only reason I can see someone, you know, taking a whack at the pinata that is the Phoenix Coyotes is if you're able to move it in, what, 3 years? You know, accrue a couple of losses for a couple of years, chomp down hard, write a couple of checks, and then pull up stakes and move to another more lucrative market.
Yep,
isn't that the only way that you can see someone doing that, getting involved?
Then you might
as
well just move them anyway, because I think I honestly
that's what I'm saying.
I know this. You know, in having conversations with fans out in the area, is that part of the reason why this team can't succeed right now, despite having success on the ice, is because nobody believes it's going to stay. How do you market this team knowing this, that it could leave tomorrow? So it needs stability is what it needs, and it needs someone to come in and have the lease that they were talking about. I mean, it's all these things, and that's frustrating. It stinks.
You know who this is a good day for, though, is the taxpayers of Glendale. Because if I'm a taxpayer and I have to make a decision between, you know, fire trucks and propping up an NHL team, or fixing potholes, or fixing streets, or education for my kids, I'm not taking the hockey team. And this city council, unlike the last one, isn't looking too favorably upon propping up a hockey team in the Driving.com arena.
No.
That's why they think this thing's done. The $320 million is off the table. This is a threat. You know, Gary Bettman was pretty good at issuing threats throughout the lockout. You know, this is not just a threat. This is a reality from that city council. That sweetheart deal, 20 years, $320 million handed to you, is gone. It's off the table. Unlike the Make Whole program, this one's not coming back. Glendale City Council is not interested in a make whole project for the new owner of the Phoenix Coyotes.
The one thing that I want to see out of hockey fans today, this is the one thing I want to see. First of all, be nice. Okay? It sucks to lose your team, and there's a chance they could lose this team. As Schultz framed it, it's kind of never been darker than right now as far as the ownership situation for this team. Jameson was probably the last hope. There's another ownership group out there. There was some vague reference by Bruce Daubig into Calgary oil money coming in and maybe saving it. It's really bleak. So don't be a dick to Coyotes fans. They've been through a lot. The other thing is, don't be a revisionist history person, okay? The fight that the National Hockey League had, the core fight that they had to save this franchise from Jim Balsillie buying it through bankruptcy court, was legit. and it was a good thing for the NHL.
Yes.
The last thing you want is somebody to be able to circumvent the rules of this league and start stealing franchises. The last thing you want, and that goes for any market. It's not just a struggling market. If the Montreal Canadiens are up for sale and the guy who is selling the team finds some loophole in which he can get $100 million in his pocket from a Russian oil baron, so said oil baron can then own the Montreal Canadiens, we want to make sure that loophole is closed. So the fight that the NHL had with Jerry Moyse, with Jim Balsillie, in trying to acquire a team through the court system rather than through the National Hockey League's standard practices of buying a team, this was a good fight to have, and it's good for hockey that it happened. Now, you can separate that from the continued fight to keep the team there, because that's a war of ego. That's a war of Gary Bettman saying, we spent all of this blood and treasure in trying to keep the Coyotes there, so now we're going to keep – I'm going to make sure that we keep them there. That's what that is.
Hang on.
Okay?
It's not just ego. I really don't think. And this is from the media point of view. When you're approaching a national broadcaster, the first question they ask is, which markets do you have? And Phoenix is a pretty lucrative one. I know it sounds ridiculous because there's not a lot of eyeballs there. And if you look at the jobbing.com arena, not a whole lot of fans there either. But just having a presence in that market means something when you're executing a buy, for example, from a national point of view, or negotiating with a U.S. TV partner for a national grid as well.
That is important to
the NHL. That is important.
I get that. But at some point, the benefits of having a team, say, in Toronto that could generate incredible revenue for this league outweigh the – there's not going to be a television entity that is going to decide whether or not to get in bed with the National Hockey League based on whether or not they have a franchise in Arizona. It's not going to happen.
No, but it makes it an easier conversation. Right?
I think that's a 1990s argument, to be honest with you. I think it's a 1990s argument when the NHL
totally
proved that it had a footprint that was bigger than the Northeast and Canada.
True, and from a perception point of view, you don't want to leave markets. Trust me, the NHL did not want to leave Atlanta. They were just out of options, out of owners. That ownership group had been wrapped up with themselves and against each other in court for years. But when you look at the Phoenix Coyotes situation... The NHL needs to have that, but you can't find an owner that's going to float it. It's not going to happen. And you're right. When you look at this, some of the expansion that we've seen, you know, Dallas is in trouble. Florida's always been in trouble. Like all the hot spots, Anaheim's in trouble.
Dallas is relocation.
Like, what's that?
Right. Dallas is relocation. That one
expansion.
Dallas Stars relocation.
Oh yeah, from Minnesota to Dallas. One of the provisions was too they would get a state rival. The plan was again for Houston. Remember the big Les Alexander play?
Oh yeah,
that was going to be one of them. Then that sort of dissolved. I always thought that Dallas, by the way, would do better if there was a team in Houston. I always believed that.
So what do you think the end game is here for the Coyotes this time around?
Seattle.
From what you've heard, from
Seattle.
What you've seen.
There's a couple of options. There's a couple of options here. One, straight relocation, just send them to Seattle. The team stays intact. Or you can mothball the franchise, okay? Sort of put it on hiatus and do a dispersal draft with all the players. And that franchise still stays intact, and then when the market appears for it, that's when that team moves. And I don't think it's going to be Toronto, and I don't think it's going to be Quebec City. Greg, you've made this point countless times, and I agree with you. The NHL wants those two as expansion models
because they
would like the hundreds of million dollars that come along with expansion fees. You know, if it's a Seattle play, chances are there's not going to be an expansion fee. That's just going to be a straight relocation. There'll be a relocation fee, but it won't be near as exorbitant as an expansion fee.
Right.
Bad, man. Listen, if you know a Phoenix Coyotes fan today, go hug that person. Go hug them.
Hug a Coyotes fan today. It is officially,
today should be,
hey, everybody,
yeah,
January 31st. You know what that means. Just hug a Coyotes fan, Dave. You see a Phoenix Coyote fan walking around the street, wrap your arms around him, give him a big old squeeze-a-roo, lift him in the air, tell him it's going to be okay on Hug a Coyote Fan Day here on the Barrick vs. Wojcicki podcast.
Honka, honka. It's bad, man. It's bad.
That's really not keeping in the spirit of the morning zoo show that we're doing. Honka honka, it's bad.
No,
man.
This is Debbie Downer show.
People are reaching for sedatives as they reach for their coffee in the morning with your level of energy.
Where's the energy, man? Didn't you go to that seminar and learn how to do the show properly? Oh, well, speaking of which, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Are you familiar with the game called hockey?
All I have to do is talk for a living.
If you say lube 10 times, you just feel better.
You say lube 10 times, you're going to feel better.
Why shouldn't I always be happy? I'm stealing money.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I went through life with this last name, okay?
I'm a kindly old wizard.
Close your eyes, hold your nose, swallow the medicine.
Debate hockey.
Swift Current Broncos. Las Vegas Hurricanes. The Vancouver Giants.
God.
Pop culture.
I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I never am on this show, so we still may have Twinkies here in the States.
Still may have the ho-ho.
Good news, might have the ding-dong.
And more hockey.
Jeff Merrick on the puck. Up and down. Knocking the biscuit around.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
It's bad. Did I mention
today
it's bad?
Is a day...
It's bad. It's really bad. It's Hug a Coyote fan What's... day. It's bad.
It is Hug a Coyote fan.
It's just bad.
Today is a day about rivalries, sir.
Oh,
today is
yes.
a day about rivalries. It is the first game of the season between the Boston Bruins and the revamped, muscle-bound, gritty, sandpaper, punch-throwing Buffalo Sabres. And the first game for Ryan Miller back in Boston since the Milan Lucic incident. So we're going to have Mike Harrington on to talk about the Buffalo side of the ledger in a few moments. But the question of the day today is very specific to rivalries. What is the bloodiest moment you can recall in your team's fiercest rivalry? Tweet it, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick, hashtag at MVSW. Email it to puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. The bloodiest incident or moment that you can recall in your team's fiercest rivalry. I don't think the Devils and Rangers had a bloody incident. I don't know if there's been one incident that really stands out as being like over the top violent, but I mean, we've had a couple of brawls off the faceoff in the last year. And I have to really kind of think for a second here about the Devils Rangers being bloody in their rivalry.
I mean, the one that comes to mind for most fans of this vintage is Colorado and Detroit. And, you know, Dater even wrote a book about it, you know, and that was probably for the last generation, the bloodiest rivalry of all time. But I mean, aren't all these rivalries just born out of playoffs? I mean, can you think of two teams that just out of nowhere developed a blood feud for one another? Isn't it always playoffs that kick that off? It's always, right?
Yep.
Well, otherwise, otherwise, you know, Anaheim and Los Angeles should have a fierce, like brutal, bloody rivalry. They don't. Why don't? Have you ever wondered that? How come Anaheim and LA don't hate each other? Well, they've never played in the playoffs. They've never had that.
Mike Barber writes in, Chris Drury getting his head popped by Chris Neal in 07, and yes, I'd maintain Ottawa is Buffalo's fiercest rival. That's something I haven't heard before.
Those games have been vicious. I remember going to one 2 or 3 years ago at the then HSBC before it was the Effin Center. And it was nasty. I mean, Buffalo's got a few because Buffalo Boston has been a good one. Since Buffalo came into the league in 1970. Buffalo and Toronto, the QEW series, not that it was necessarily bloody, although there were a couple of like Larry Playfair, Dave Hutchison moments in the 70s and early 80s. But Buffalo, Montreal. Did I tell you I was at the game when Alexander Mogilny broke his leg in front of the Sabres net? That Montreal series?
No.
Yep. I was there. They've got a few, you know, but Buffalo's always been a fascinating market to me. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Buffalo. Just growing up as close to Buffalo and watching so many games, the great voice of Ted Darling presenting them to me as a young man. I've always said I'm not a fan of any one particular team, but I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the city of Buffalo and for that Buffalo Sabres team. It's true. Mea culpa.
Michael Mayberry writes in, St. Patrick's Day massacre for the Blues. My dad still wears a poorly made F. Roenick shirt. he bought after the game.
Blues, listen, Blues had some doozies. One thing I've always liked about St. Louis, if you're a fan like Greg and I are of some rough behavior, the odd, you know, stick down, gloves off. The one thing I've always had to respect about the St. Louis Blues, Greg, they've always had a slugger. They've always had at least one or two guys in their lineup that can throw down. That goes all the way back to expansion in 1967 with the Plagers and Bob Gassoff and El Picard. Like, they've always had guys. Even to this day, you know, carrying Ryan Reeves around. Like, they've always had a guy that can do it. At least one. And all throughout Kelly Chase and Tony Twist, like, they've all, Reed Lowe, they've always had someone. So if you're a fan of, you know, David Singer and HockeyFights.com, by extension, I'm guessing you're probably a fan of the St. Louis Blues.
Remember, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, for those who don't know, March 91, Norris Division battle, 278 penalty minutes, including 24 minors, 12 majors, and 17 misconducts.
You know what tonight's going to be like? Let's call this... What's that? Yeah.
It's not, though. But it's not. But here's the thing with that.
No.
I don't think it's going to be a circus tonight. Doesn't this remind you of the Vancouver-Boston game, the first game that they played after the Cup Final?
The afternoon game.
We all thought it was going to be insane. And then we were all like, no, it'll probably be really boring. And then it turned out to be insane.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's the case.
You had Brad Marchand low bridging Sammy Salo in that game too, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I think? You know what this one feels like to me? And this is why I love this. This game to me feels like it's the Adams division. This doesn't feel to me like this is, you know, two Northeast opponents going head to head. 2 points are up for grabs on this one. Buffalo has stumbled 0-3-1 in their last four. The Boston Bruins are riding high. No, this one feels like the effing Adams division. Back when it was the Adams and it was the Norris and it was the Smith. That's what it feels like to me. The feel of tonight's game is old-time hockey. Old-time hockey? Eddie Shore, Toe Blake? Yes, that kind of hockey. That's what this one feels like to me. And these games pop up on the schedule every now and then, and it feels like you're in the hockey universe from 20 years ago. Doesn't it feel like that to you, Wish? This feels like an Adams division game, not a Northeast division game.
Oh, God, I'm hoping.
I know.
Andy in Boston, going to the game tonight, writes in about a non-playoff rivalry. Ready?
Okay.
And this actually applies to tonight's game. Boston and Dallas had a bit of a rivalry out of nowhere. Ott and Avery went nuts in 08-09, and then three fights in 4 seconds in 10-11. Maybe it was more Boston versus Ott for a true rivalry, the Charapachi Reddy incident, although it wasn't literally bloody. Steve Ott being on the Sabres, Darcy Regier is not a moron. He knows exactly what he's getting here. Oh, yeah. He knows he's getting somebody who has been a thorn in the Bruins' side, much like he knows in John Scott. He's got himself one of the potentially most feared fighters in the league, although he doesn't fight all that often anymore. He knows what he's getting. So the stuff the Sabres did last summer was a direct response to what the Bruins did to them, and that's the right way to build a team. I think personally, if you're the Bruins, if you're the Sabres, you know if you're contending, you're going to have to go through Boston at some point. So build yourself up to go through Boston. And tonight's the test. Nobody else in this season so far for Buffalo has been the test. Tonight's the test.
It is a big one. And here to talk about this test, from the Buffalo News, beat writer covering the Buffalo Sabres, Mike Harrington joins us now. Mike, how are you today, sir?
Gentlemen, thanks very much. I was listening in. Let me tell you, Lindy Ruff said it had nothing to do with the Boston Bruins, the way they built their team. And I just about started laughing. He had to look away because I think he saw me laughing in the scrum.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I was saying, Mike, a second ago here to Greg that this and these kind of games show up every now and again on the schedule. We had one with the Boston Bruins and the Pittsburgh Penguins after the Matt Cook, Mark Savard incident. This one, to me, Mike, doesn't feel like it's, you know, two Northeast Division rivals looking for two big points on a Thursday night. This one, to me, feels like a dirty Adams Division battle between the Boston Bruins and the Buffalo Sabres. Does it have that vibe to you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the morning skate and we go in the Sabres dressing room and Steve Ott is absolutely swarmed by the Boston media and John Scott, who I may add is a great guy, probably did his biggest media scrum he's going to do all year before a game. That's basically the only thing people are talking about today. You know, Claude Julien basically tried to downplay it and say, well, you could talk to the other team and ask their coach and Lindy certainly tried to downplay it too. And let's be honest here, the Sabres need 2 points more than they need 2 pounds of flesh here. But the Milicic thing, you know, they took care of it a little bit last year with Gostad, but it's never going away. And here's the thing to me, the significance of it, guys. This will be Miller's first appearance in Boston since the Lucic thing. Jonas Enroth played the other two games after that last year. So there's certainly 15 months later still a tie-in.
Oh, sure. You know what? As the blog Sabres Noise pointed out, also Ryan Miller's first game against a Jeremy Jacobs own team since the lockout. Which I think
I
is brilliant as well.
I mentioned that this morning, too, and I mentioned that in my story this morning, and I definitely got some emails about that. And, you know, don't think these things are insignificant when you're putting hockey players on the ice. Ryan certainly got back after the lockout and tried to downplay that whole story, but we know it was widely reported, and we know pretty much what happened. And knowing Ryan, there's always a little extra.
Hello?
Ryan Miller wants these 2 points.
Oh, there he goes. All right.
You know, as we all know, the visiting team fills out their lineup card first. Who do you expect to be in the starting lineup for the Buffalo Sabres?
Well, you know, I think, frankly, Lindy ought to just put the fourth line out there. Put John Scott out there right from the start. Let the Bruins throw Sean Thornton or their AHL call-up Wayne McDermott out there. Maybe get this thing taken care of in the first minute, and you know, maybe we can have a Devils Rangers reunion from last year kind of thing and get the thing over with right away. But I do think you're looking at early fireworks, and after a while it'll cool off and we'll get down to hockey. But certainly any member of the Sabres, rough or anyone else, saying there's no statement to be made tonight is making a false statement.
Well, but here's the curiosity for me, and here's the question I've been asking, you know, even going back to, you know, regardless of what happened with Paul Gostad last year, the moment that the Buffalo Sabres muscled up in the offseason, I've been asking this question. The first time these two teams get together, does Milan Lucic have to do the honors? Does he have to do this? I mean, imagine, you know, Sean Thornton will be in there, Lane McDermott will be in there, but isn't this about Milan Lucic? And it's not as if Milan Lucic is, you know, Danny Paille or a shrinking violet on that team. This is Milan Lucic. Had a couple of fights already this year, dropped Matt Karkner last week. So he is, you know, a rough and tumble guy that's not shy about dropping his mitts. Question I have is, does Milan Lucic have to fight tonight?
You know, I think he'd want to, and I think the Boston Bruins would tell him not to. I mean, I think he's too valuable a hockey player for that team to allow himself to be taken off the ice for 5 minutes by John Scott. I think the Sabres are certainly going to try to engage him. I question whether they're going to get him. Does he have to? My attitude in the hockey code of honor, so to speak, is he had to when they met the next time in Buffalo, and 2 minutes into the game, he took it up with Gostad. Everyone knew it was coming. He answered the bell fine. To me, Milan Lucic's obligation is over. This is an issue the Sabres continue to have.
Lost in a lot of this is the fact that the Boston Bruins have won 3 in a row and are pretty much the best team in the Eastern Conference right now, whilst the Buffalo Sabres, who started out pretty strong, have now lost 4 in a row and are trailing the field in the Northeast. What's gone south for the Sabres outside of the Vanek injury?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing to me is they simply are a one-line team. They have very little secondary scoring. The line of Tyler Ennis, Marcus Foligno, and Drew Stafford might have been the hottest line in the league in the last 20 games of last season. Stafford still doesn't have a goal. Vanek, Pominville, and Cody Hodson have done virtually all the scoring. The defensive play has been spotty in spots. Tyler Myers has certainly regressed, it seems. Hasn't played anywhere near up to the level of that contract, and that's a big issue as well. We'll see tonight the by-the-numbers issue is in the faceoff circle where the Bruins lead the league and the Sabres are dead last. And if you get killed on the draw, as Steve Ott and I were talking today about it, that's going to be 15, 20 seconds of chasing the puck every time around. But number one issue this team right now, secondary scoring. You are not going to win if you're a one-line team.
Now, give people a sense of where the Buffalo Sabres are at with Cody Hodgson, because right now, and, you know, there was another one yesterday, great tip-in off the Dan Hamhuis shot, Zach Cassian, has 5 goals and a couple of scraps under his belt for the Vancouver Canucks. Where's Buffalo at with this trade right now? Because they're kind of loving it right now in Vancouver.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously Cassian, you know, it didn't do much for Vancouver at the end of last year. Hodgson's been okay. I mean, the way I look at it is, you know, I almost have a baseball mentality to it in that you develop your prospects to become stars in your team. or you develop your prospects to make them assets to trade for things you need from someone else. The Sabres needed a center. Right now, anybody who asks me, I think there's no reason why we can't say it's a good trade for both sides. The Canucks needed another winger. They got some toughest in Cassian. The Sabres needed a top six forward and a top two line center, and they certainly got that with Cody Hodgson. So I think people are going to make comparisons because they're both first round picks. But and I have no problem with the deal, and I have no problem with any deal. It turns out good for both sides.
Last one for me, because I always get asked this question by everybody whenever the conversation turns toward amnesty buyouts. Are they going to give one to Ville Leino, you think, in the summer?
Well, you know, that's the I'm trying to do the math here. That's the $22 million question or the $18 million question. you know what, though? There's a big issue with that. It's pretty obvious he would be the number one candidate for this team. But right now, he hasn't played a game. He's not skating. He has a hip problem. It seems pretty clear he's headed toward surgery in the offseason. Any plans to buy out Ville Leino right now could be short-circuited by his health. So that's something certainly we're watching closely. You know, I've asked Ruff and Darcy Regier the question a couple times. Do you have concern Leino is not going to be able to play at all this season? And they've answered, no, we're still doing treatment. We're still moving forward. But he's not skating. He's not close to returning. And that certainly could impact this team's long-term future financially in terms of the buyout situation if Ville Leino is not available to be a buyout candidate.
Mike, last one for me, and we thank you for your time as always. And by all means, enjoy the fights. I mean, game this evening against the Boston Bruins. Were you surprised Mikhail Grigorenko made this team?
No, I think for exactly that reason. They needed centers. He showed in his fifth game in Washington what he could do on a scoring line playing 17 minutes. He's been much better than I would have expected defensively for an 18-year-old, and certainly that's important to Lindy Ruff. And I think realistically the fan base certainly needs something new and different. He represented something new and different. And I think at this point, if you're going to be in that fight to get to eighth place and maybe not make the playoffs, why not have your top draft choice in there and develop them in the NHL? So I think people pretty much expected him to stay, and that's how it went down.
Awesome stuff. Mike Harrington, thank you so much for joining us in the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, and we will talk to you again soon.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
There he is, Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News beat writer coming off the Buffalo Sabres this season. Do you think Lucic has to do it? I know I'm sort of keep banging on this one, but
I don't think he does. I think the main event's going to be Thornton and Scott. They've been circling each other for a while, and they've never fought. So I think that's the main event. And like we wrote about on Puck Daddy this morning, like there's also this history where Thornton was slashed in the face by a skate, I think, in 2011, and then he got chirped by the Chicago bench, and then Scott wasn't playing in the game but still had a problem with the way that Thornton played, and it was a whole thing. And Scott's kind of backed off the comments since then, but at the same time, they've never had the cathartic face-off between heavyweights, and I think that'll probably be what happens tonight. I don't necessarily know if we're going to get a Lucic fight or not.
See, I kind of think that he does. I kind of think that he has the obligation, because with all due respect to Paul Gostad, that was the only slugger they had. And that's a middleweight guy who sort of sheepishly went out there and said, okay, Milan, I'm out here because I have to do this. Just don't hurt me too badly. Like I found the Buffalo Sabres, man. Ask a Sabres fan, is it over? Did the Paul Gostad fight end anything? And they ask any Sabres fan, you know what they'll tell you? No. No, it didn't. Not at all, because they didn't have anyone on the bench they could send out to settle the score or to deal with Milan Lucic. Now they do. I just wonder, does Milan Lucic, and you could say whatever, the code, does he have an obligation to do it? I would say yes. I would say yes, he does. And here's a scary thing, if you're a Buffalo Sabres fan. What if Milan Lucic accepts? What if Milan Lucic wins? Like, we're all just assuming that Lucic is going to get...
Felled, you mean?
Hey, Colton Orr dropped him in their first game. Right? Remember that shot? Shot to the body! Shot to the body! He's Roy Jones Jr. Bang! John Scott goes down. Who else
Sabres? A Sabres fan corrected me and said that Scott simply slipped.
He slipped when Colton Orr's right hit him in the ribs. It caused a slip. Yeah, absolutely. Like, here's a scary thing. because this is a chance for the Buffalo Sabres, again, to stand up on their own 2 feet. It's a team that last year was embarrassed because they had no response to the physicality of the Boston Bruins. And say whatever you want, stupid male ego and machismo, all that kind of stuff. But it does mean something for a team. It does mean something for a room full of testosterone-fueled guys. You know, this is not uptime for the Buffalo Sabres. But the scary thing is, what if Lucic drops them?
Man.
Then what?
Then what?
Dun, dun, dun.
Then you have to go, teach some MMA fighter how to skate and hire him.
All of a sudden, like Brock Lesnar's coming out of retirement. They're teaching him how to skate in Buffalo. Well, it is an interesting one tonight. That's why, you know, 7 o'clock tonight, I'm glued. Normally I'd be, you know, flipping around and watching a couple of games. I'm kind of going to be scared to flip away from this one, Wish. I really am.
Moving over to another team in the Eastern Conference, I want to talk a little bit before we get we understand we're going to have Sarah McClellan on to talk about the Coyotes situation.
Good.
I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, the Penguins right now, 3-3. Six games, 3-3. Goal differential of -2. They haven't won on home ice yet. The Pittsburgh Penguins are at the New York Rangers tonight. Not a very easy game for them at all. Rangers are also 3-3, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Bylsma in trouble, sir?
Yeah, that's what I keep hearing. Those are the whispers. I, you know, heard it again as early as last night. Again, so the last couple of nights at work, the whispers and the calls, and what do you think about Bylsma and Pittsburgh, and is his time running out, and can they really do this in a shortened season? If he goes out, who goes in? So where once upon a time the conversation wouldn't even be entertained, the conversation is kind of happening. So it's more than just out there, and it's not just me on this podcast saying it. It's out there. People are talking about, is Dan Bylsma in hot water right now?
I would hope that they would go and try to make a trade before.
I agree. I agree 100%. I'm taking no delight in saying that I think Dan Bylsma's in hot water, or I hear Dan Bylsma's in a little bit of trouble, and we'll see what happens over the next stretch of games. I take no glee in that. I'm just saying what I'm hearing and saying what the vibe is out there. I like Dan Bylsma. I think he's smart. He's engaging. He, at times, is pretty funny. I loved him in 24/7. As much as Bruce Boudreau came out, you know, kind of the star, I suppose, of that edition of 24/7. After that HBO special, didn't every team kind of say to themselves, man, I wish we had a coach like Dan Bylsma.
For sure, for sure.
Wish we had a guy like Dan Bylsma.
So you're saying that, you know, Dan Bylsma, although he earned the respect of people, would have been much more popular on the show had he been roughly 300 pounds heavier, dropped the F-bomb a lot
sauce
more,
on his face.
And had chicken wing sauce on his face.
Chicken wing sauce on his face, pretty much. And they always shot him with a red lens, too.
Now get your asses out of your heads.
Oh, God.
You just actually made me a little angry, though, to be honest with you, because, like, I had forgotten about 24/7, and I forgot that the lockout cost us 24/7 for a while.
Yeah, it'll be back next year, though, bro. Don't worry. Here's the problem with 24/7 next year. You know what it's going to be missing?
Brian Burke.
Do your impression, Wish. Come on, Wish.
I can't do it on command. You know that. I have to conjure
okay.
the spirit.
Oh, okay.
It will have Elijah Cuthbert. That's good, right? That's good.
I would hope that Elijah would be part of the festivities.
That's good. Joffrey Leupold.
Yeah.
I think will be great on 24/7.
He'll be good too.
These aren't really the sexiest teams though, 24/7 wise. I don't know if there's like a Scotty Hartnell on either team.
You're not going to have Lidstrom. You're not going to... Pavel Datsyuk. You know what? 24/7 will be a success if we get to know, if we get a glimpse into what Pavel Datsyuk is really like.
Yeah, off the
ice. He may be the shyest guy in the NHL. I remember talking to Mayday once about Datsyuk, and I'm like, well, what's Datsyuk like? And he's like, well, you don't really know. Like, he's a pretty private guy. He's a funny dude. I remember, what did he say once? Mike Babcock, when he's going to coach Team Canada in the Olympics, went up to Datsyuk on the bus and said, Hey Pavel, who's tougher to come down against? Which defenseman don't you like coming down against? Pronger, Niedermeyer, or Doughty? And he told him to F off. Because Babcock was on a fishing trip for who give Pavel Datsyuk fits at the Olympics. He said the whole bus cracked up. But here's the thing about Datsyuk. He's shy. He's, you know, I hate using the term around a Russian hockey player, but he is. He's this enigmatic dude.
Oh,
hang on. I'm not saying on the ice. I'm saying off the ice. Because no one really knows this cat.
Well, I asked,
I asked Brad about his workouts one day. And Brad says, nobody really knows. Like, we'll all be at the gym, all together, working out, doing our thing. Datsyuk will vanish, and he'll come back like 45 minutes or an hour later. He'll be soaked with sweat. No one really knows what he does. And he's one of the most physically fit guys. No one knows his workouts. No one knows a ton about him. If HBO's 24/7 can let us know what makes this guy tick, and we learn a little bit about this mega superstar that we know nothing about, then I think 24/7 will be a success. Like, honestly, Wish, we know a ton about Sidney Crosby. We know a ton about Alexander Ovechkin. We know a ton about Malkin. We know a ton about the superstars in the NHL. What do you know about Pavel Datsyuk?
Well, we know a lot on Puck Daddy, thanks to the stylings of Dmitry Chesnikov doing those amazing Q&As with Pavel Datsyuk. But again, you're right.
Mr. Greg.
Oh Jesus.
Why do you do that's this? My DC.
I know that, but understand that Dmitry and Lambert both don't like when we lampoon them on the show, when we do impressions.
Oh, really?
Not fans.
Lambert? I would have thought he would have been totally Chuck Chill out about it.
Yes, it's the best impression ever. Signed, an idiot.
Okay, from that point of view.
Sorry.
I do it as a tribute to DC. He's one of my favorite guys.
A couple things before we get Sarah McClellan on. This is from Lexi. If the Penguins fire Bylsma, he'll break Boudreau's record for being out of work. That would be an idiot move. I agree. He'll find a job in a millisecond. Ben Smith.
Absolutely.
Do the Penguins have any pieces that could even move? Would Letang be on the block?
No, not a chance. He's the only guy that can gallop back there. He's as untouchable as Sidney Crosby. They made their move. They traded Jordan Staal. The only thing they have to deal with is those young defensemen, whether it's Scott Harrington or Derek Pouliot or Olli Maatta. Those are the guys that they have to – Simon Desprez, those are the guys they have to deal.
And now Boychuk part of the mix too, huh?
Hey, picked up on waivers.
Very exciting.
That's right. I tell you, man, I keep saying it. If I'm Ray Shearer, I'm trying to get Sam Gagner out of Edmonton.
El Capitan 86, I burn to know more about Datsyuk and Kessel, if he's even there next year, the gossip floating around Kessel's draft year. Derek writes in, the word enigmatic popping up in a conversation about a Russian player is the Godwin's law of pro hockey. That is the damn truth, Derek. I can't believe he went there with Datsyuk. Enigmatic.
But I wasn't talking about him on the ice. I was talking about him more off the ice. We just don't know. Introduce our guest. She's standing by. She's being very patient.
Seth Jones is very well spoken.
Joining us now on the line is a writer for the Arizona Republic. She covers the Phoenix Coyotes. God willing, she'll continue to cover them for many, many seasons, but that's looking a little bleak. It's Sarah McClellan joining us there on the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast. Hello, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well. What is the latest? We'll get to there's so much to talk about the Coyotes on the ice, and yet now we have to open the interview with, what's the latest on the ownership thing? What do you hear?
You know what? There's so much speculation circling this issue, as expected, because today is the deadline for Greg Jamieson to complete the sale to save the arena management deal that he had previously worked out with the city of Glendale. So this was expected to come to a head today. I don't think those who have, been well-versed in this issue and this ownership saga expected him to complete it before the deadline. It was going to run right up against it, but so much is out there that he is falling out of the picture and that he doesn't have the money. And the latest report that we have this morning that our paper reported was that an attorney representing Greg Jamieson called the city of Glendale mayor last night asking for an extension, and that extension was not granted. So that's the latest that we've been reporting. Obviously, there's other outlets out there running with different stories. And, until we really get an official announcement from Greg Jamieson, I'm really skeptical to believe everything that's out there. That's been tough to pin down his camp, to get comment from from him or his advisors. And that's kind of been status quo. He hasn't been very visible since he came onto the scene about a year ago to throw his hat into the ring to try and purchase the team. So that's not unusual, but with today just billed as the deadline and expectation that some announcement would come by today, it's unusual that nothing has come out, you know, officially from that camp. There's obviously still time for him to make an announcement. Really, there's still time for him to finish the sale. He has until 11:59 Arizona time, which is Mountain Standard Time. So, you know, there's still time. There's still 11 hours to get this thing done. Will it happen? Most things no, but nothing in this ongoing saga, as I like to call it, would surprise me. Something could happen to get this back on track. There were rumblings that there were some other interested groups that had money that were willing to step in. We're not really sure how accurate that report is, but nothing would surprise me seeing that this is approaching the four-year mark. We've seen a lot of ups and downs, and until this is officially over, I don't know if we'll get any type of resolution today or even tomorrow.
Wow. You know, this is the lease arrangement that you talk about, Sarah. That's the $320 million spread out over 20 years for Greg Jameson. But this new version of Glendale City Council differs sharply than the previous one. Can you describe the difference between the two city councils and how they view the Phoenix Coyotes and their ownership situation?
Yeah, you know, the one that was in here previously, before the elections happened in November, a lot of them were very pro-Coyotes and really wanted to make this work. I think they obviously see a beautiful arena in the heart of their city that needs an anchor tenant. And that's what the Coyotes provide. They have 41 games at least this season. You know, they see that as a viable way to keeping this arena alive and well. And, you know, they built it. They have money invested into it, and they need to try and turn a profit off of it. And concerts only come through X number of times a year. And really, that's a competitive market in Phoenix. There are so many other venues that concerts and events and the Harlem Globetrotters. There's so many other events just in the metropolitan Phoenix area that they can choose that if they really wanted to play that game, it would be a challenge, I think, to get as many concerts in there as they would like. So really, the Coyotes are the best option, I think, in that sense, to have a permanent anchor. So I think the old council really realized that they had been, you know, with this issue from the beginning, and they passed, you know, this reworked lease agreement that happened a few months ago to pay Greg Jameson an arena management fee for running it. He had incentives built into this deal to bring in concerts, to bring in outside sources of revenue. And, you know, it really seemed like a sweetheart deal. They got it down from the $324 million deal that was previously worked out in the summer. So it seemed like this was probably the best deal that they were going to get. Now, elections happened in November. It was a new mayor has been implemented, new council faces, and these ones aren't very receptive to the idea of paying Greg Jameson, you know, $15 million a year to run this arena. They see, you know, the tax revenue sources that have to be opened up for that. You know, they see a really bleak financial future for the city of Glendale, which is already in a little bit of financial turmoil, you know, with budget cuts, and where are they going to find the money? And so I think there really was a push to get this done by this January 31st deadline to really save face on this previous deal that Jameson is likely not to get if he does, in fact, try and renegotiate with this new council. So, and really just pointing to the fact that, you know, the mayor has told our paper that he would not grant an extension, I think really sets the tone of what type of relationship this new council and Jameson could have. Obviously, they could extend it. He very well could have extended the deadline and given him an extra week or two to secure whatever he needed to secure. Many are speculating it's investors and money, but it sounds like that's not going to happen, and I think that really sets the tone for how receptive or not receptive this new council is to essentially, you know, giving money away to someone to run the arena.
Yeah. Hey, back on the ice, so Tyson Nash went nuts last night saying that Derek Morris had a problem with Nail Yakupov's celebration. I'm pretty sure I have this one on lockdown. I'm pretty sure it was Morris was pissed off because he thought the goal shouldn't count because of the hand pass. And then Ryan Whitney from the Oilers chirped him, and then he starts throwing punches. Is that accurate, or was there some crazy thing that Yakupov did that pissed off the Coyotes last night?
You know, and I looked back at that tape, too, and I've been trying to find Derek Morris to talk to him today. He was nowhere around this morning. It was a getaway day for the Coyotes, and he was scarce last night in the locker room. There was only a few guys there available to chat, and just to kind of see, yeah, what he was really mad about. But I think you're right. I don't think it was the celebration. The celebration was actually fairly tame by Yakupov standards. I think he was just kind of motioning for his teammates to come celebrate him scoring the game-winning goal. And I think it was the fact that the Coyotes thought it was a hand pass, and that's something that they were talking about after the game. They felt that, you know, it shouldn't have counted. Obviously, it redirected off of Whitney's hand. The league deems that's not a hand pass, but they felt it was. Tippett said that he wasn't given an explanation, you know, on review of whether or not it should have counted. But I think that's what they were upset about, and it really just capped off a night where they could only dress 11 forwards. They're so, you know, hampered right now by injuries, and the fact that they clawed back with 19 seconds left to get a point, I think it was just that emotional, you know, roller coaster, and it spilled over into that reaction by Morris. But he's an old school guy. You know, I don't think he probably needed much of an excuse to let his frustration boil over, but I think it was more with the play and less with the celebration.
Hey, Sarah, curious, what do you think the future, if any, because the trade rumors have been out there for a couple of seasons now, what's the future look like with Keith Yandel in this team?
You know what, that's a name that has been really at the top of the radar list in terms of trade, you know, speculation with the Coyotes. And I think that's fair because he really is the biggest asset that I think they would be willing to deal that could fetch a fair return. I think obviously Oliver Ekman-Larsson has more potential, and they see him, you know, as a bigger part of their future. So I wouldn't call him an untouchable necessarily, but he is the closest thing to an untouchable on this roster. And I know general manager Don Mahoney is always taking calls. He's always listening to anything that other GMs want to offer up to him. And I think that's what happened at the draft last year when the Yandel speculation really peaked. You know, some teams really, I think, were trying to fish around and see what he was available. And Mahoney will listen to everybody. He has to be very creative with how he fills out this roster, and he has some handcuffs that obviously other teams don't. So I think it's only shrewd that he listens to every possible option that's out there. I don't think it's going to be easy to peel Yandel away from this franchise. I think they still see him as a cornerstone of this defense and of the franchise moving forward. He's an assistant captain. You know, he had 40-plus points last year. I think they really see him as an offensive threat from the back end. And when you don't have the skill up front and the firepower to just go and score four or five goals every night, I really think they see a lot of their offensive contributions coming from the back end. And so in that sense, they really need a guy like Yandel who can man the point on the power play, who can really help in transition play and starting an attack, getting the rush going. So I think it would have to be a very big return to pull Keith Yandel, you know, out of Phoenix. And I know there was probably, you got speculation probably picked up again right around training camp. And I think, you know, that might have been the prime time, because I think Yandel's value might have actually gone down in these 2 weeks of the regular season. He hasn't really played that great. He looked great in camp. He really was flying out there. You know, the layoff didn't seem to be affecting him, but he struggled, you know, as the Coyotes have in these first, you know, 7 games. And yeah, I'm sure he'll figure it out just like this team will. But, you know, if they were looking to deal him, I think his value's gone down, and they'd get a diminished deal now than if they did when, you know, maybe it was a better market for him before the season happened. But, you know, he's a big piece of this organization. I think it would take a really big return. You know, we're talking top line player, bona fide top line player to get him out of Phoenix.
Awesome stuff. All right, Sarah, good luck tonight. Should be an interesting night on the ownership front and all that good stuff. And good luck for the Coyotes. They were my pick to win the division, so hopefully they get their asses in gear this week and start
putting
up points.
Wow, yeah.
Indeed. Thank you for joining us here on the podcast. Take care.
Thanks, Sarah
Bellin, the Arizona Republic.
Hang a hug a Coyotes fan today. Hey, you know
it
what is
in
interesting?
In fact, hug a Coyotes fan today. That's true.
There is, and hearing Sarah say, you know, there's still 11 hours till a deal can get done, and Greg Jameson has, you know, has some time here throughout the day to to raise $170 million. there's only one way that I see it happening today, and that's if Gary Bettman holds a lot of paper on this. Like, that's about it, right? Like, it's a phone call from Greg Jameson to Gary Bettman. Gary, how much paper can you hold on this deal? And I'll be the owner in name, wank, wank, with a couple of bucks thrown in, wank, wank. But, Gary, we need you to hold the paper on this one.
Hmm.
Like, that's about it, right? Because it's been how long since he's been out hat in hand?
Well, the thing about it is, though, like, in every other situation, Bettman's wound up digging up somebody to own the team. You know, whether it's Vinick in Tampa Bay. Like, he's always found somebody.
So what does that lead you to believe, then, about these books? It's awful.
They're pretty bad.
Yeah.
They could use some cooking.
Oh, yeah.
Cooking by the books. Yes.
Like, you're right, because they found Tampa, they found Dallas, they eventually found Nashville. Like, Gary's been able to pull owners out of the hat and people that come out and buy these franchises. What does that tell you about Phoenix?
Michael DiBiase, the Million-Dollar Man. Bloodiest moment and fiercest rivalry preseason. Rangers Devils at MSG. Scott Niedermeyer versus Valeri Kamensky. Kamensky's jersey ends up on Niedermeyer's head. Niedermeyer punts jersey in anger. Oh, bloody, I thought you were saying hilarious. Random Penguin, Sergei Zubov.
I never saw that one. Ooh. Ooh, I don't know. I've never.
Conrado Paderez. As regards to the question of the day, being a Canucks fan, I really don't believe there's been a bloody moment with the Hawks, but the most memorable memory of the rivalry has to be the Lion Brawl from a few years back. That counts. I don't know if there was blood, but that was awesome. Remember that big one with the hair pulling and everything? I'll always remember. More gear on, the infamous hair pull, and really wishing Luongo would have left his crease and fought Hobby. I really wish that the Hawks Canucks would play each other in the playoffs each year, and that would be, for me, hockey porn. Keep up the great work, guys.
Is that the one where Alex Burrows pulled Duncan Keith's hair?
Yep.
That was throwback time, because guys used to pull hair in the 70s all the time. You remember that wish? Now you go back and look at fights now from the 1970s. Isn't it kind of embarrassing? And hair pulling now is just looked like you look so down your nose. Like, really? You're pulling hair? It happened in like every fight. Although, you know what? I wonder. Here's my question, Wish. If guys didn't have to wear helmets now, would we see more hair pulling in fights?
Absolutely.
It used to happen all the time.
Especially because there seems to be a trend here in the league for a lot of players having a mad flow.
Yeah.
Now, would they have mad flow if they didn't wear helmets? I think so, right?
I think so, yeah.
Would they all look like Bobby Hull? Would it be like that? Would it just swing the other way? Would it all get militaristic haircuts because now they don't have the helmet on?
Speaking of mad flow, have we seen a better mad flow fight than Zach Smith and Ryan White last night? I don't know how any of those guys could see in front of them. Talk about two guys with the sick flow, dude. That was probably the best sick flow fight that I've seen in quite some time. I don't know that I've ever seen a better one. Both guys had the feathers.
Yeah, it looked like a White Snake video, just hair whipping around everywhere. great job out of White last night, by the way, picking up that extra two for the unsportsmanlike.
Oh man, and that's when Ottawa dined out on the power play, and then it was over.
Oh.
Completely over. Hey,
this is
you mentioned
Ray Ballinger, Ballingy, Belanger.
Don't call him Ballanger.
October 30th.
Don't call him Ballanger.
October 30th, 2004. Nashville versus Detroit. My first Preds game. Let me review the fight card. Listen to these fights. Ready? Here's some names in the past.
Let's do it.
Jeremy Stevenson versus Darren McCarty. Hartnell versus Yuri Fisher. Scott Walker versus Kirk Maltby. Jordan Tutu versus Matthew Dandino. Adam Hall versus Chris Chelios. Walker versus Maltby 2. Adam Hall versus Brendan Shanahan. As the video shows, before I could throw a punch, I took a right like a bitch to my jaw, and since I dropped gloves before Hall dropped his, I took an instigator and a misconduct. Jeremy Stevenson versus Dandino, and then Jamie Allison versus Darren McCarty. Best for me, Preds win 5-3, and I got the ticket for free, four rows from the glass.
First of all, that's an awesome email. That's outstanding. Yeah, that counts. And that's another thing about Nashville as well. I talked about St. Louis. Going right back to their inception, what has Nashville always carried with them? Tough players. They've always wanted the king of the jungle. Always respected Nashville about that one.
Listen to this email for the question of the day, which, by the way, was what was the bloodiest moment in your favorite team's rivalry? Margarita Ramsler. Thank you.
Pause. When you send us a tweet or an email, can you go the extra mile and phonetically spell things out for Greg, who has to read these names? Can you do that for us? When you're going to send a tweet or you're going to send an email, just make it easy on poor Greg.
So
he's getting
sad.
He's getting a little older. He's getting
such
a little,
an
and you know, and guys, Greg is getting a little older and he drinks. He needs help with names. Please.
It's a miracle I can remember there's 30 teams in the league. I drink so much. Ready for this. None,
yeah.
Man. This is about the rivalries. None, man. Okay. I've been a hockey fan for 2 friggin' weeks. No blood as of yet. Here's the crazy part. I'm a business major. Came for the lockout. Stayed for the sport. What? We might have to have this person on the show.
Someone's goofing on you.
Of course, that's a goof.
Came for the lockout. Ooh, I love me some work stoppage drama.
I want that to be true in such I want it to be true. Brittany Barry writes in, I would have to say the bloodiest moment of the Pens Flyers rivalry in recent memory would have to be the Derek Engel and Jody Shelley fight from a few years back. I didn't realize how much faces bled until that fight. A great non-bloody moment in Pens rivalry would have to be the Brent Johnson versus Rick DiPietro fight when the news broke that DiPietro was out with facial fractures after Johnson dropped him with one punch. It was probably the hardest I had ever laughed. Random Penguin, Marty McSorley.
That's right. He was drafted by the Penguins. Oh, very good. Yeah, that was one where we found out that Brent Johnson was a lefty pretty fast. I guess DiPietro found it out quicker than we did.
Oh, the power of digital media. Margaretha Zamzalar. Now, why
Margaretha
is Margaretha
Zamzalar
writing back? Because I swear that's true. My accounting professor is a hockey fan, and we did a case on the ethics of the lockout. This is Merrick. Listen, it's like finding a unicorn riding a Bigfoot. We have found a hockey fan created by the lockout. As opposed to the lockout killing hockey fandom, the lockout has created. This is like finding an alien hybrid baby. This is a moment in which we need to savor this. It will never again be documented by science. The lockout created a hockey fan.
Wow, and this person is coming on the podcast, Wish. Josh, we got to get this person's contact info.
All right, let's do it.
I will forward the email.
Send it to Josh. This person is coming on the show.
I am blown away by this. I want Gary Bettman to give this person a medal. Bob Campbell. I don't know that
it's just going to encourage the NHL to do more lockouts because clearly that builds the fan base.
That's true. I don't know that there's been that much between the Canadians and Flyers anymore, according to Bob Campbell. But Chelios' hit on Brian Propp stands out in my mind as a big, bad, bloody moment in what was once a pretty explosive rivalry.
Made Brian Propp's ears bleed. Remember that? He popped them and Brian Propp laid there on the ice and blood came out of his ears. That was frightening. That was, that was the one with the benches cleared before the game. That was Ron Hextall going after Chris Chelios. That was the Flyers and Habs used to have vicious playoff series. And actually it was a bench clearing brawl at the end of a period. I think it was a preseason game that ended the myth of Dave Schultz, where Larry Robinson, you can see this on YouTube. Just type in Dave Schultz and Larry Robinson Flyers Habs brawl. Robinson is late to the brawl because he's already in the dressing room, has his skates off, and he hears that everyone is fighting, and he puts his skates on, and Big Bird goes right at Dave Schultz, grabs him, and then starts pounding him. And that, folks, was the fight that ended the myth of Dave Schultz. He was never the same fighter again, and the fear that Schultz had over the league was gone, all killed by Larry Robinson.
Wow.
They used to be vicious. Oh, those Flyers-Habs games were vicious. Oh. Habs, you know what? Habs never got their due for being a tough team in the 70s. You just think it was, oh, it's Guy Lafleur and Steve Shutt. And they were tough too, man. They had some, whether it was Bouchard or Lupien or Larry Robinson, they had some tough players on their team, boy.
With regard to the Boston-Buffalo game tonight, this is from Ryan Acklin. Let's talk about the real showdown tonight between Sabretooth the Tiger versus Blades the Bear. So much blood, so much fur. By the way, the winner of that fight is probably Sabretooth the Tiger because he rides that little ATV all over the place, right? So he just run him over.
Yeah, or it's a good getaway to regroup. Yeah. That's probably true.
Tom Mannington, our good friend from across the pond, the worst moment I can recall, albeit not really a pure rivalry for me, is Ty Domi's elbow on Scott Niedermeyer behind the play. Just cowardly move. That's my editorial. Move. Even as a Leafs fan, although never a fan of straight-up goons, it still makes my blood boil to this day how much, like Scott Stevens in that penalty box, I've hated Domi ever since and still can't understand what the Leafs saw in him. Are you ready?
Well, he fought. He protected.
Mannington should really be more direct about how he feels about Ty Domi. A dog shit player who can rot in retirement, as far as I'm concerned. I hate you, Ty Domi.
Now, listen, Ty and I have had our past, okay? Actually, I went for drinks. Did I tell you I went for drinks with Ty in Halifax?
Nah.
Yeah. We ended up at the same place together and kind of had one of those, all right, let's talk this out moments in Halifax on the Tuesday night. It was pretty funny. The one thing, listen, Ty and I have had our past, and we all know what happened when I was hosting a program called Leafs Lunch, which now exists again, by the way, where he walked out on me and sort of stormed off. The one thing you can say about Ty Domi, a couple of things. One, you can never knock his skating. Ty Domi was always a really good skater. And two, whether you like him or not, that guy fought everybody that came into the Air Canada Center. That guy fought every heavyweight that came in, and he did it to, listen, he did it to protect his teammates. You can say whatever you want about Ty Domi, you know, being, you know, a political creature within every team that he's been on, and that might be true, but the one thing you can't knock is that guy's guts, because he fought everybody that went to the Air Canada Center. Everyone. And he was half their size. Both in, you know, stature and in weight as well. And how many times did you see him get dropped? Not very often. Yeah. Not very often.
Allison Jessing writes in, the Flyers-Senators line brawl in 2004, it was the worst fight I've ever seen. I saw it right around the time that I first started watching hockey seriously. It made me question if I really wanted hockey to be a source of entertainment, but I got over it. And then there was one. Oh, Sasky wrote in. Sasky Stewart wrote in.
He's Sask.
Saska wrote in because her all-in-caps headline on her subject email is, rivalries aren't just for the NHL, Wish. Sorry for the caps lock. It's nearly 6 a.m. and I'm Red Bulled. Rivalries aren't just for the NHL, though. One of the best AIHL, that would be your Australian Hockey League, started in brilliant and bloody fashion with a brawl that ended up in the car park of the ice rink from the benches.
Oh, Jesus.
There was a cheap shot, some ejections, someone took offense, someone snuck around and dragged someone else out of the opposing locker room and into the car park, where the benches noticed and cleared through the penalty box, and the rest, as they say, is AIHL folklore. Hence to say, we don't ask players from the LNAH back much. For Jeff's geeky side, one was Gaetan Royer, who saw all of three games in the NHL with Tampa Bay. Do you know that name?
Gaetan Royer. Yep, I know Gaetan. Yeah, he finished up in that Quebec semi-pro league.
It was a Royer, not a Royer?
No.
Gaetan
Royer. That's all right.
I was the penalty box attendant that night. I was the penalty box attendant that night. The box was between both benches and no barriers doubled as the first aid area.
Ooh.
And after the resulting black eye and nearly broken toes, I accidentally copped in the rush to clear out. Well, at 4:11, it was one of the funnier days in that role.
You know, we don't see this often, if ever, in the NHL that, you know, an on-ice grudge spills over to the parking lot. But Mayday and I were talking at Hockey Central the other day, just watching hockey games. We were talking old Buffalo Sabres stories. Did you know that John Kordick tried to get on their bus once in Quebec?
Really?
Buffalo was playing a game against the Quebec Nordiques, yeah, and like everybody fought. Mayday fought a couple of times, Barnaby, Gord Donnelly, they just acquired Everybody fought. Rob Ray, obviously. And Ray and Kordick had one for the ages, apparently. And Kordick didn't do very well in the fight, but still wanted a piece of Rob Ray. Followed him through the parking lot. Ray gets on the team bus, and Kordick follows him. That's how psycho John Kordick was. No Quebec Nordiques teammates with him. Just got on the bus to go fight Rob Ray and a bus full of hockey players.
That's one more thing. One more thing about the game of hockey, being that this is a hockey podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Your thoughts on Roberto Luongo starting at home against Chicago tomorrow night?
Is he?
Yep. He is.
No. I love it. Oh, I love it. Dude, do you know what they were chanting yesterday in Vancouver?
What?
Lou! They love him again. They absolutely love... This is the worst case... Well, is this the worst case scenario for Mike Gillis? He's openly talked about trading this guy. It's the worst kept secret in the NHL. They've pretty much handed the keys of the Chevy to Corey Schneider. Now, all of a sudden, look who's back. Oh, it's the Fonz, and everyone loves him again.
So tough.
It's so awesome.
I wish every team had the problems that Vancouver had, which is having two world-class goalies on their roster.
Dude, I love this story. I love it.
Babies.
And if you don't, and listen, whether you follow, first of all, you should follow him on Twitter. But even just, did you see what he said to Damian Cox yesterday?
Tell him though. I forget what the
this is hilarious. Was. So they're in the scrum, and Damian Cox is standing behind Luongo. And Luongo turns to Damon and says, "Oh, are you here scouting for the Toronto Maple Leafs?" How do you not love this guy? Yeah. Honestly, I don't care where Luongo goes. I think I might be his biggest fan. I absolutely love Roberto Luongo version 2.0. He's one of the best things going in the NHL, and I hope this story doesn't stop, because it's a great one. Throws a shutout yesterday, and they're chanting his name at Rogers Arena. Oh my God!
It's such a great story. I'm sure all of the Tampa Bay Lightning fans out there are saying, "Boy, hate to have the Canucks problems. Two world class goaltenders on the roster."
Right, hey, they're doing fine, man. Lindback's doing okay.
I am Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet, who this morning scared Greg Wyshynski very much when I said, "Hey, Wish, it doesn't matter how long we go on the podcast today. It's my day off." Yeah, I don't have anything to do tonight except watch the Buffalo Sabres and the Boston Bruins. That's the only game on the board tonight, right?
And as usual, 11 minutes past the hour on the show. So
we can keep going.
No, music's going to run out. Thanks to Mike Harrington for setting up the Bruins and Sabres. Thanks to Sarah McClellan for telling us all about the Phoenix Coyotes and their unfortunate... all that stuff. And we'll be back for... Game show Friday. Tomorrow.
You mailed that one in, Wish.
I wasn't trying to do the usual opening. It ain't the opening yet. By the way, everybody, check out the story that I wrote on Puck Daddy about the best hockey moments in the history of 30 Rock. 30 Rock series finale tonight, 1 hour long. So do check that out as well. And there's a picture of Tina Fey with the Stanley Cup. So fap, fap, fap.
Ooh,
we will talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Bye.